Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
I love to search out that truth. You know that because you and I, you folks and myself, we share all these on an everyday basis, but we just don't think about it. Well, it's about time that you will. Now, we're going to, good hour. A little bit later on, Victoria Summer is going to be joining us. She is a singer, actress, and she's got a great story. She's done some fantastic things, and you've seen her on the big screen and the small screen. And you know me, I always like to find out about people and what they're all about. And the other thing is I always want people to be positive and joyous. And that brings me to... Well, we all want to be happy, right? But would you believe that being kind is the fastest way to happiness? Jordan Birnbaum thinks so. Jordan is a serial entrepreneur, a speaker, author, and founder of Jordan Birnbaum Consulting. Now, he looks for social science solutions. I want to find out what that is for people and for businesses. Now, from holidays to everyday life, being kind can fit into your life. We're going to find out how from Jordan. Hi, Jordan. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so tell me, social science solutions, what does that mean?
Well, social science is one of those things that we all experience and understand intuitively. They are the forces around us that shape our decision-making.
Okay.
And so, for example, if we're going to think about what might affect someone's decision-making, you might consider, well, did they get a good sleep last night? Did they have a fight on their way into work this morning, or did they have a pleasant surprise? What are the kinds of things that may have affected their moods? What are the kinds of things in the environment that might affect how people react to stress or to positives?
Okay.
And so when you're in the world of social science, really what you do is you learn the names of all of these things that we all experience instinctively. But the reason that's so powerful is because once you learn the name of something, it allows you to both speak about it and to use it with intentionality.
Got it.
And the easiest example of that I can give is that we all understand intuitively that people are more motivated to avoid losses than they are to secure gains.
Oh,
in other words, people hate losing more than they like winning. And this is something that we have all experienced and figured out through experimentation, even just as kids. But until you know that there's a principle called loss aversion that describes this exact thing, that idea is only available to us through our instincts. And that's why learning the names of these social science forces is so powerful, because it allows us both to identify them and then to start doing them on purpose.
Yeah, but don't
and
we
so
realize...
the social science solution...
Yeah,
I might try to look for ways in which loss aversion can help.
Yeah, but Jordan, to be honest with you, don't we all know there's going to be losses in our life? It could be relationships, it could be family, it could be job, it could be a myriad of things. There are going to be losses. So aren't we strong enough to handle that?
Oh, unquestionably. But I suppose the way that I would frame it to you is I could say to a leader, think about all the promotions that you stand to gain by improving. Or I could say to the leader, think about all the promotions you stand to lose by not improving. And the second sentence is actually twice as motivating as the first.
Oh.
And so it's merely to understand that if people are more motivated to avoid losses than to secure gains, that we can then use framing to help present the most persuasive arguments that we can.
Okay. Give me an example of what Jordan Birnbaum has done with a situation where the loss was stronger than the gain for you.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think if I were trying to analyze myself at an emotional level, I think I am probably more motivated by a fear of failure than I am by a desire of success. And I think that's probably pretty common for people. And, you know, actually, one of the things that I have found is that accomplishment tends to be a little bit underwhelming. It's never as good as we anticipated being. And so in that regard, I think that I have really experienced firsthand the power of loss aversion, but I've also tried to use it for good when trying to motivate people towards making healthier life decisions by framing things in terms of loss aversion.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the fear of failure, which that's an overwhelming fear for most people. But can it be a learning process? Now, don't get me wrong. We all make mistakes. So there are some failure, if you want to call it failure. It's a mistake. Now, if you keep doing the same failure over and over again, then that's just plain stupid. You should write that across your head. But fear of failure can also be a learning process, can't it?
Oh, unquestionably. Well, I think failure itself, and on a certain level, there is a kind of organizational culture in which you can say that failure is not only okay, it's in some ways encouraged. It means that you're trying new things. And so long as something is learned, even if you didn't get the outcome you want, failure is a funny word for it, it gives you new information for new moving forward. So yeah, the way that we all improve is by making mistakes. And so I think part of what we can do to make our lives as impactful as possible is to give ourselves room for that to happen and not beat ourselves up and think it's a reflection of our worth.
Okay. Define kind.
I would say that kind is an intention and an action to positively affect someone else.
Okay. Example. Give me an example.
Gosh, I think that providing someone with a meaningful compliment that you can tell is identifying something that's deep within their personas, and so making people feel seen. I think that going out of our ways to try and cheer people up, I think going out of our ways to try to make people feel included and encouraged, making gestures of generosity and support are all ways in which we can be kind to the people in our lives. And it's funny what happens to us when we are kind. It's about as good as life can be.
Let me give you an example of something that happened to me, as a matter of fact, yesterday. I do my exercises in the morning, bike and weight and all that kind of stuff, and then I take a walk. And there was a couple of doors down, a young man who came out, and I said, "Good morning, how you doing?" And he said, "Oh, okay." I said, "Looks like work never ends, does it?" Because he was loading some stuff into his SUV. And he said, "Yeah," and he said, "It's my birthday, and I have to work." And so I said, "Stay where you are. I only live a couple of doors down. I want to give you something." And I just went back on a whim, and I had a package of cookies that I hadn't opened. So I just took the cookies over to him, and I said, "Happy birthday." And, you know, the smile that I got back from this young man was incredible. It made me feel better than I think it did him. You know?
It's but incredible.
But he said, "You know what? You made my day." Because nobody else cared to give him cookies or cake or whatever, or maybe even just to wish him happy birthday.
Well, this is so wonderful. I'm so glad that you're in a headspace where that's where your natural instincts took you. It's an indication that you're in a really healthy place, that you can approach that situation and instinctively want to do something to make that person feel happy. But I guess part of the point that I would make is, it's wonderful that you did that, and I'm so happy that this young man had that experience. But can you imagine a scenario in which you would do something like that and then be in a bad mood?
No.
No, it's not possible. When you're nice to somebody, it lifts you up and in an incredible way. And so I always tell people, like, if you're feeling depressed, go out and be nice to somebody.
Mm-hmm. You know what I do? This sounds really silly, but I've done it for years. If I'm shopping in the mall, and I'm passing people, and I smile at them. Now, the first time they go, what's this crazy lady smiling at me for? But then if I see them coming back the other way, they smile back. And it's
right.
And it feels good for me. It feels good for them. Because I don't think people get much, I don't know, in this day and age. It's crazy out there, Jordan. There's a lack of, you know, kindness to each other. Society is against each other. Politics is against each other. It's amazing when you can do something, not one little tiny thing to make a change, right?
Well, unquestionably, and I guess that what I would say is the fact that they're smiling back at you gives you the evidence that you need of what matters to people. And
yeah.
It does feel crazy out there. And yet I have to say that every time I go anywhere and talk about kindness or write about kindness, and trying to make it cool and trying to make it something to which we all aspire to, the response is incredible. It resonates so deeply with so many people. And so I guess one of my questions is, you know, why aren't more of us sort of bringing it out to the surface and making it more of a conscious intention?
You know what I worry about, Jordan, is the electronics.
Yeah.
You know, especially with the young people, their nose in the phone, on the computer. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm running my show with three computers. So, okay.
Right.
But, you know, face-to-face, there's nothing better than face-to-face or voice-to-voice. You know, you can hear the inflection. On the electronics, all you can do is either shout or you don't shout. That's it, you know. And I want to hear the inflection. I want to hear what they're feeling. And you feel that from the facial or body language. And for the voice, right?
Yeah, you know, it made me think of something. I'm old enough where I was going to parties before we had cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is that, look, you know, when you're a teenager or a youngster and you go to a party, it's awkward. And especially in the beginning, trying to find somebody to talk to and trying to fit in, it's really awkward. And if I had a phone to look at to help me get through that, there's like a whole skill set I never would have learned because I always would have gone straight to the phone. So I think that what you're talking about is so valid. At the same time, you know, evolution is evolution, and sometimes it works in our favor and sometimes it creates new challenges. But I think there's nothing that we can do except for now counter-program, like, you know, understand what the effects are and now try to be intentional to find a balance, because obviously technology is taking us in this direction, and it's going to be incumbent on us now to start being intentional about making real connection with people in real life.
So what do you think is going to happen with artificial intelligence? I mean, it's here. It's here to stay. It's not going anyplace. But it's going to get stronger. And will that take over so that it's going to be worse than it is today?
Well, I guess the question is that, well, if artificial intelligence can take over for everybody's job, couldn't it also take over for all the CEOs and all the shareholders? Like, at what point do we cease being about finding a progressive path forward for humanity, right? Like, it's almost like we've lost sight of why we do capitalism in the first place. Like, the point is, everybody trying to make things better for themselves is what gets to the best output for everybody. That's why we do it, because it gets to the biggest point of collective good. And so it just feels to me like everyone's kind of lost perspective on AI, like this idea of, like, if it's going to take all our jobs, well, then who's going to do any buying?
Yeah.
Who's going to sell to whom? The system won't work if we get to the point that AI replaces all the jobs, because there won't be an economy to support. An economy can only work when everybody's participating.
No, agreed, 100%. But I do worry about that, because did you ever see the movie called WALL-E?
No, I've heard about it, that it's about, like, sort of a really polluted Earth.
It's an Earth that, you know, robots pretty much take over. And here's these blob of people just, you know, hanging out and doing nothing, because the robots can do, or the androids can do everything for them. And, you know, it's kind of scary in a way, because is there any motivation to be successful, or, you know, to help others, to be kind to others? There's no motivation for that anymore if they take over. And I've interviewed, honestly, Jordan, I've interviewed so many researchers who are working directly on artificial intelligence. The final question that I always ask is, do you think they will ever come to the point of being sentient and being able to think for themselves? And every time, Jordan, there's a pause and they say, we don't know. Now, that to me, they know when they say right. that. But I don't know where we're going with it. We're using artificial intelligence, but I don't want artificial intelligence taking over. I want it to be a tool, just like computers are a tool, phones are a tool, Siri's a tool, Alexis is a tool. I don't want it to take over my life. You know what I mean?
I do. You know, you brought up such an interesting paradox of humanity, which is we aspire to become more comfortable,
mm-hmm.
but then the more comfortable we become, the less effective we become.
Thank you.
And it's, you know, I suppose there is this point of like, do you reach a point of diminishing returns when you become so comfortable that you just kind of stop moving forward? And it's a really interesting existential challenge for which I don't think there's an answer.
No, there isn't. And that... To be honest with you, that makes me nervous. I like answers to things, but I don't always get them. But yeah, I mean,
well,
I want
to... That's life for you.
It's one of those things where I want people to have ambition and motivation and creativity and imagination. I don't want that to be lost to AI.
You know, at least as far as generative AI goes, it never will be. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I feel really comfortable about is that, you know, creativity is why human beings will always be ChatGPT. ChatGPT will always be regurgitating something that already happened. And so what ChatGPT gives you today is what you did yesterday. And what you're doing today is what ChatGPT is going to give people tomorrow. And it's always going to get people right into the middle of a, you know, the standard distribution with the same average crap. And it's always going to be new people with new ideas who are doing the things that get everyone else's attention. So until the sentience thing happens, I do not worry about creativity and generative AI. But with sentient, if it becomes sentient, then all bets are off. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, you and me both. And the other thing is, AI is smart. Androids, and they say, well, they can't think because they're programmed. But, you know, they have now formed new chess moves that have never been done before. They have soccer plays that have never been created before. To me, that's thinking, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, you're right. There's, I guess I don't know how to explain that. If generative AI is creating new soccer plays, that's very interesting. I was probably speaking more in terms of the written word.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I probably need to expand my thinking.
Yeah, but AI can write in the style of Shakespeare or Longfellow or whatever and come up with it. They come up with a lot sometimes better than what we write. But, you know, there's a failing because I want the mistakes that a human makes, the failings that a human makes, because that's human. It's not robotic.
Right.
I don't want to ever get to the point of being robotic. And they take places. I have a friend who has a daughter who just went into college. And the teacher or the professor basically said, I want a synopsis of the story that you're going to write or the, you know, whatever you're going to do. And she said, and let AI check it out. No. I want a human being checking it out, not AI.
Right.
AI can help me with a few things, with terms or whatever, but I don't want it to rewrite what I say or how I say it. Not right. It's not right.
Yeah, well, you know, something else that's interesting is that I think that when it comes to content creators, most people who do what you do or what I do for a living, we're very comfortable with the blank page. We can take a blank page and get started, but that's not how it is for a lot of folks. And so for folks who really struggle with the blank page, that's where I can see how ChatGPT could be a terrific asset to help them sort of get started. But even whatever ChatGPT creates, I agree with you, it should be a human being that then takes that as a starting point, you know, the idea of running it past ChatGPT to evaluate it, it feels backwards.
I tease on the air periodically. I say, hi, this is Mary Jane Popp. Maybe, you know, because AI can copy style, the way I the sound of my voice, all these kinds of things. So I said, you know, you may be talking to Mary Jane AI instead of Mary Jane Popp. And I know that might be an extreme. It'll probably never happen even close to my in my lifetime or yours. But, you know, it's questions I like to ask because at least I, you know, have some idea of what the possibilities are out there. And AI and medicine and all these kinds of things, yeah, absolutely. But anyway, we're getting off the thing of being kind. How? Give me some examples of what we should be, how to be kind. One thing is you said, if someone's sitting alone at a table, you know, cafeteria or whatever, invite them over to your table. I mean, they may say, are you nuts? You know, what do you want with me? But I think it's a way to start, right? Start a conversation.
Sure. You know, so one of the things that I think about when we think about kindness, and especially coming into the holidays, is that we always think about the holidays as a really happy time and families getting together. And we just sort of default to a really happy set of images in our minds. But for a really sizable chunk of the population, the holidays are awful.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who's lost someone close to them, a parent, a sibling, a spouse, holidays are especially painful. The rise of estranged parents and children is really extraordinary. And so there's people who are not connected to their extended family. And then there's just people who are lonely, who lead kind of lonely lifestyles. And in their day-to-day, it's easy to get lost in the routine. But come holiday time, when you don't have a lot of connection in your life, you're really forced to reckon with it. And so I think it behooves us all to be thinking about the people around us and wondering how they're doing and maybe being a little bit more proactive and making sure that people have a good option, the people in our lives have a good option, and maybe being a little more explicit in offering, like, hey, if you're looking for something to do, there's a spot open at our house for the holidays.
Nice. Yeah.
It really changed a life.
And you're right. I mean, I lost my husband a year ago, December the 8th, 23.
I'm so sorry.
And it is difficult. But, you know, the loss makes me want to find new things to do and more exciting things to do and being kind and sharing. But this last year, well, actually when the pandemic hit, probably that was the worst time for two generations, maybe three generations. It was awful.
Yeah.
So how do we get out of it? The hate that has been prevalent in our country this last year or two is unbelievable. So how do we turn that hate into kindness and happiness?
So I'm going to sound really sort of snooty here with this reference point, but I just want to say I've never actually read the book that I'm about to quote. It was shared with me by a close friend, but it was so impactful that I have held on to it. And
okay.
There's a book written by Voltaire called Candide, in which he talks about all of the things that he has experienced in life. And towards the end of his days, when he reflected on all the different things that he had done, he found that there was only one thing in his entire life that ever brought him true happiness, and that was tending his own garden. And I think that speaks both literally and metaphorically. And one of the things that I think we can do when times are this toxic is to try to, we can't put our heads in the sand, but we can make sure that we're investing, call it at least 51% of our energy into our own garden, into our own relationships, our homes, our friends, our families. And I think that that is what can help us get through periods where there may just be social forces that are greater than any of us individually can handle. And so it's going to be a question of finding the right balance between, you know, to what degree do we protect ourselves and the people we love, and to what degree do we fight the fight?
Well said. Do you have a website?
Actually, I'm going to be launching one in just a few days, and so I'll announce it here. The website is www.glindagroup.com. Glinda, as in the Good Witch. So www.glindagroup.com. We will be debuting it, actually, on Tuesday of next week. So go check it out. Until then, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, Jordan. Keep up the kindness, because we need all of that we can get out there. Not only
and I
the
just
holidays,
want to say that, that what you are putting out into the world also is very positive, and is the kind of thing that we can do to try and make a difference, is to get people talking and thinking and connecting. These kinds of discussions will spark good things. And so I applaud you for what you do.
Thank you. And right back at you. Take care. Have wonderful holidays and a wonderful year, period. You know?
You too.
And take good care. You too. Bye. Once again, that's Jordan Birnbaum. And it's Glinda, like the Good Witch, glindagroup.com. Being kind is the way. So we're going to be even kinder, because we're going to share with a lady who is not only talented, but also very kind. Coming up on Pop Talk. It's hot to the max in the summer, and your air conditioner gives up the ghost. Who are you going to call? ACP Mechanical, that's who. I did, and I can't believe what a great job they did in my home. It's cool and comfortable with a job well done. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Whether it's cooling or heating, Enrique and his ACP Mechanical team can install, repair, commercial or residential, no matter what HVAC system you have or want, and they've done it for over 20 years. Air conditioners, heat pumps, furnaces, thermostats, all quality and affordable solutions, and they're bonded and insured. I know you'll love their work. I do. Call ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556. That's 916-704-8556 for all your comfort needs. That's ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556, and expect an expert job well done and right the first time.
The Native community is big for me. Makes me feel good to pass on our Arapaho traditions. My kids love going up to the Sundance. I like to tell people the Sundance is about family. It's about the tribe. It's not just about the dancer. It's kind of like life. As a Sundancer, I'm just one spoke in the wheel. I need my family there. I need my role models. I need my people there, especially my children. You know, coming in that door, my family is ready to see me, and they believe in me. Before, I'd never seen that from my people. But now when I walk in that door and I see those smiling faces, and they're happy to see me, that's special. With my four kids, all I ask for them in Arapaho ways is health and happiness. Nothing more, nothing less.
Never stop being a dad. That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
She's an actress, and she's a singer extraordinaire, perhaps best known for her extraordinary role as Julie Andrews in Disney's Saving Mr. Banks. But her list of credits goes on and on, just like she says in her song, like Transformers Age of Extinction. And I can go on with a whole bunch of things, but I want to be able to talk to her for some time, because she never stands still. But it all began from pantomimes and singing in the church choir and local theater, and she never looked back. She is the indomitable Victoria Summer. Hi, Victoria. How are you?
Hello. Fantastic. Thank you for having me.
You betcha. You started at age 3 doing in your lofty career? Really?
Yes, I was doing Good Toes, Naughty Toes.
Oh, for
in ballet.
No kidding. So you took ballet. Were you also into music at that time? I mean, you're only 3, but
I was. My grandpa, actually, at the time, my mother's father, really got me into classical music. And I used to wake up early in the morning and put Tchaikovsky on the record player and dance in the lounge for like an hour before breakfast. It was something that I just was in love with classical music. And that stayed with me.
Wow. So now your latest movie, is it out yet, Vindication Swim?
Vindication Swim is out in the UK. It entered the charts in the top 20, the digital charts. So it's on Apple and it's on Amazon Prime.
Fantastic. And then what about Brooklyn All-American?
Brooklyn All-American is yet to be filmed. I'm still waiting on that one to materialize. But, I'm very excited about that project because it's an amazing cast, an incredible group of people to work with. So.
Wow, that sounds great. But you actually have a big band that you work with?
I do. And our next gig is New Year's Eve here in Los Angeles at the Biltmore Hotel. And we actually performed last year at the Biltmore for New Year's. But we do sort of major galas. Like last year, we did the Women in Film Gala. And I love singing with an orchestra. It's just so elevating as an artist to be able to sing with an orchestra. It's just one of my favorite things to do.
So if you could describe what your style of music is for you that makes you happy and joyous, just like Stranger in Moscow. That first of all, why Stranger in Moscow? I'm curious about that. I mean, I love the song, but I want to know why.
I'm the hugest Michael Jackson fan and Elton John. If I was to name my two favorite artists, they would be those two. So I decided to put the two songs together because at the end of Stranger in Moscow, we sort of moved the music video into Sweet Painted Lady by Elton John. And that record, Yellow Brick Road, was like me and my dad's favorite record. And we grew up listening to Elton John, and we used to literally sit outside his house in Berkshire, because that's where I was born and it's where Elton John grew up. And he had a house there, and we used to sit outside his house and play his music in the car when we were kids. So those songs mean so much to me as an artist. And Michael just affected me greatly growing up. He was the artist that I was singing, to a hairbrush in front of the mirror and dancing. And Elton John, my dad got me into Elton John, and it's never left me, particularly his early music. I'm just his biggest fan.
Amazing. So do you have a philosophy of life? I mean, because obviously you do all these different things. You do movies, you do television, you do big band, recording. What is your philosophy to keep you going and doing all these different things?
I just think us as beings, it's our purpose to create. And I think that for me specifically, I want to make people happy and elevate people through art. And that's whether that's a voiceover or an audiobook or a stage performance or a movie or whatever. It's just brings me a lot of joy to do that. And performing in front of a live audience is one of the most incredible things you can do, whether that's in theater or, at an event or whatever. It is an amazing experience. And music is my life, really. I mean, it always has been. It always elevated me. Whenever I felt down or I felt like I couldn't do something, I would put on Kelly Clarkson or Christina Aguilera, whether I was running or whether I was in the car. Artists have lifted me up, and I want to do the same for others.
Absolutely. Talking about that, you also created a new website and television show called Next Generation Role Model. Tell me, what's that going to do?
Next Generation Role Model, the purpose of that is to really shine the spotlight on leaders and visionaries of the next generation. I think it's really, really important that our youth are role models to others. And I think that idea of setting a good example is very important. And I just managed to find a lot of amazing young people in Hollywood, but then it sort of became international. I started finding people in England and Spain and Italy. And and I ended up interviewing over COVID. You know, COVID was a tough time for us all. I wanted to do something for the world, and I wanted to create this show that put the spotlight on kids who were doing good things. And all these kids have pretty big followings on social media. They're out there doing good in the world. Most of them are ambassadors of charities. And I wanted to acknowledge them, really, for being incredible kids and being leaders. And so that's what that's about.
I think it's great. Now, is the website still up?
It is, nextgenerationrolemodel.com.
Fantastic. Well, that's easy enough to find. That's a great idea. because with the pandemic, you're right. I mean, that shut everything down. You know, people just couldn't exist anymore. And the people were dying, and it was a very depressing time for everyone. And to have something, hope, the word hope anymore has been kind of eroding in the last few years. And it's nice for people like yourself in the position that you're in to be able to do this, to bring that hope back.
I think so. And we all hold on to... I think what's important is holding on to our dreams, you know, because that really inspires us to move forward in life. And I really believe that our dreams are very important. And I go as far as to say, write down those ideas and goals, you know, every day and do a little something towards them, because that really is, it's the essence of life. It's the... Mm-hmm. You know, it's the spark, it's the effervescence of life, is just being able to just be on this path of just getting closer towards your goals and creating your ideal life, you know. And that goes across the scale, you know, from your family to your, you know, your peers to, you know, spirituality and the world as a whole. It's and I just think that we all need to be here and keep putting good into this world.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be the way everybody else does. Be unique. Try something. Create. You created your own world, and other people can do the same thing. Now, do you write your own songs?
So I don't write that much. In fact, I don't write. Like I'm on another project at the moment, and I didn't end up writing it myself. I decided not to. It's because really I feel like I already do so many different things, and I haven't turned my hand to writing yet. So at the moment, you know, the idea of the music is really the female version of Michael Bublé. That if I could put it into a sentence, that's what I'm going towards. So with my music, it's that, and I have so many fabulous friends who are amazing writers. So I just feel like collaborating with them is very exciting.
Very good for you. Now, I know you are super duper busy, but do you have any hobbies? Do you have even time for a hobby?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just love being at home with my husband. I got married last year in May.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. It took me a long time to find the right life partner, you know, but when you find that person, I think that's the biggest decision you'll ever make and a very exciting moment. And we just really enjoy spending time together. My husband's Italian and he's a chef and he's taught me how to cook. And I love cooking for him. I love cooking with him. And we have a whole little home of animals. We have two cats and a little Pomeranian. So I just really love, I adore animals. And, you know, I've rescued them all. And that's really my hobby.
I think that's more than a hobby. That's a calling. I think that's fantastic.
Because
it's Bentley, Tiger, and Storm, right?
Oh, you're so great. Yes, that's it. Yes.
I love people. You know, I honestly feel that people who care about animals care about people the same way. People who, you know, abuse animals, I don't want to know them, I guess. Yeah.
No, I agree. I agree. It says a lot about people, the way that they treat animals.
You betcha. Now, I got to ask you, and if I'm delving into your love life, but it's a real life love story between you and Fabrizio, isn't it?
It really was, because it was such a non-existent story for so many years, my love life. It was like I was single for 8 years. I mean, and it was a long time, and I just never found the right person, and was focusing on my career for so long that I thought, wow, you know, is this ever going to happen? And I really wanted it, but it just took me a long time. And yeah, we met in England. I had to go home back to England. I sort of put my stuff in storage in LA for a year, and I went home to my dad because he was not doing very well, and I needed to really put a lot of work in at his house and his health and help him a lot. And it was sort of after I had to refurbish my dad's house in England in 2019 and get him back in eventually in 2020. And then I met my husband shortly after I got my dad back in the house, in a coffee shop in a place called East Grinstead in West Sussex in England. And He walked into the coffee shop, and I was having coffee with an Italian girlfriend of mine, and she actually knew my husband and invited him over and introduced him to me. But it was sort of like a chance meeting, and he was just on a stopover on his way to Italy. He was just stopping in London for the weekend, going to Italy to see his nonna. And then the lockdown happened. Italy closed down. No one could fly there, and he got stranded in London, and we ended up going on our first date in London, and we went on 8 dates, and it was a major lockdown for us all, and we ended up moving in together.
Amazing!
That was the story. Aww. But I basically knew I was going to marry my husband, I think, after the first day I met him. I know that sounds really strange, but I knew exactly what I wanted, and he was everything I'd always wanted and waited for, really. So I was just in awe of him, and I still am. I still think he's the most incredible person I've ever met.
So what were your wants?
Oh, number one was 6'2", and when I stood up, I could tell, wow, he's 6'2", isn't that funny? And he's and he has dark hair and dark eyes, and that's another thing I wanted, which is all very physical attributes, but I mean, really, it's a question of having the same goals, and we really do have the same goals in life, and I think that makes the biggest difference.
Now, he's still a chef, though, right?
He's still a chef. He is, yeah, and he's chefing here because he ended up, after we met, he got a green card, not because of me, but because he's a great chef. And he came here, and I said, let's move back to L.A., because that's my home and has been for a very long time. So he moved here with me, and he's doing really well here.
Excellent. Well, who knows? He might get a television show. They got an awful lot of, you know, chefs on the air.
So he's working on that right now. Funny you should mention it. Yeah.
See?
So that is his idea. He wants to have his own show, and he's definitely working on that.
So is he a specialist in Italian food or other types too?
That's right. Taught by Nonna. Taught by Nonna in Italy, you know, at a very young age to cook. And he grew up cooking with her and learned pretty much everything from her, and then ended up going to chef school in the south of Italy. He then did his cordon bleu school, and then he got a Michelin star in Florence, and then worked in some of the top hotels in London, like Claridge's and the Connaught Hotel in Mayfair. You know, he was in London for 10 years working as the chef, and now he's private chefing for celebrities here in LA.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, so if you could take a magic wand and wave it in the air, what does Victoria Summer want to do? I mean, if you could pick the ultimate thing that you would want to accomplish.
Yeah, well, I must admit that I feel like Michael Bublé's career is amazing. And if, you know, now I could continue to be singing with a band and have a career like Michael Bublé, that was probably along the lines of my perfect career.
Very good. You know, that's a goal, right? That's a goal that you're working toward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I still want to stay doing theater. I still have aspirations in theater, because obviously I have my degree in dance and musical theater from arts educational schools in London.
Uh-huh.
And that was my first love, really, was musical theater, The Sound of Music and Mary Poppins.
I got to ask you, though, to step into the shoes to do the Julie Andrews in Saving Mr. Banks, that's pretty gutsy.
It's pretty gutsy. It's some pretty big boots to fill, isn't it? Yeah. And I felt like I was really young then, you know. I was very new in Hollywood then, really.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to be on set with the likes of Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson, it was just sort of like a moment of like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
It was just like an amazing moment for me that went by so quickly. And of course, it turned out to be the most amazing film. We didn't know it at the time of how big it was going to be, but that was sort of like a big moment for me, sure, and a turning point in my career.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and the thing is, Julie Andrews, I mean, her voice, I can picture her always in the music, The Sound of Music, always. You know, and on top of the mountain and turning around and everything. Unfortunately, she's had problems with her voice, with polyps and all that, and that's sad. But look, I mean, it happens. Look at Celine Dion. You know, she has this freezing, or it's a physical thing where everything freezes in her throat. I mean, to have that happen to the glorious voices, it's just incredible. But hey, it is what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's very sad about Celine, but she seems to have made a comeback, and she's obviously had a lot of physical therapy for this stiff person syndrome, and she made the most incredible performance in Paris for the Olympics. That was just amazing.
Yeah, I think everybody was in shock when she got up there and did the job that she did, because everybody expected it to be maybe half of what she could have accomplished, and man, she came back strong. And that's great.
She did.
But they must have had an awful lot of belief in Victoria Summer to play Julie Andrews. I'm serious. It was just great.
Yeah, well, really, it was just what I looked like. I mean, it was basically my picture got picked out of thousands of pictures, and I looked the most like her. So
really?
I guess that was it, yeah.
Wow.
And then after my photo got picked, I went in to meet with the director, you know, so... it was really my picture, and I had this short pixie haircut at the time, and it sort of just was. That was really a moment in my career when I was really getting tons of work, commercials, you know, movies. It was just the short pixie haircut. I don't know what to say.
Well, others didn't have that pixie haircut, so you drew the attention, and that's good.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, is it true that you're also a global ambassador for Teen Cancer America?
That's right, yeah. I've been their ambassador for, I think it's 8 or 9 years now, and I hold afternoon tea events, bringing the traditional afternoon tea to America. And we've held events since 2016. We held the first one in Los Angeles. We held the second one in Nashville at the Steeplechase.
Uh-huh.
The third one online in COVID. And we just had the fourth tea in Santa Monica at the Fairmont Hotel. And I actually performed with my big band.
Oh, fantastic. How many pieces in the band?
We have 12.
Ooh, that's a good size one. That's nice.
It was a good size. We had a nice big stage, and we got everyone up there, and we raised money for teenagers with cancer and had afternoon tea. So, we like to keep that going. I like to do as many teas as I can. So that's fun.
So do you have any singles out, or you're working on your first single?
So I'm recording in the studio at the moment. I'm on my second track right now. I go in and put the vocals down next week.
Uh-huh.
So. Yeah, I'm really excited to start releasing my music. That's going to be a big moment.
Well, you're going to have to come back and let everybody know when it's ready to launch.
For sure. I would love that.
Yeah, because, you know, it seems like you just have the best of all worlds, because you accomplish what you wanted to do and you're doing what you want. No, so many people say, well, you know, you got to get these awards and those. Awards mean nothing. It's the accomplishment in your own mind as to what you've done and want to do and keep moving on. The imagination, the creativity, that must be what keeps you going.
Absolutely. And I role modeled Tom Cruise on that one. I mean, he really just couldn't care less about accolades or awards or people liking him. And he's really my role model on that. He just really wants to create what he wants to create. And he does what he's good at and what he's passionate about and what he loves. And I feel like he is the living legend in Hollywood right now that's really just creating what he loves to do. And you can tell that passion. It's so palpable. You can see it from miles away, you know.
And he has no sense of what ageism is, you know. It's just, he just keeps going, you know. And
I know.
It's, you know, he comes, gets on the screen, and you go, he hasn't aged, you know. How could he do this?
No. And it's incredible. I have no idea what he's doing to look so fantastic.
Well, if he's taking an elixir, yeah. I want it, you know. So.
That's right. That's right.
but I think part of it is because he loves what he's doing.
Yeah, I think so too. And that keeps you young.
It does. Because a lot of people kind of like, oh, you know, I can't do it. I'm done. I'm too old to do this. Who says? You know, if you allow yourself to be that way, you will be, right?
That's it. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So what do you want people to know about Victoria Summer?
Well, I mean, I have my new music on the way. I'm working on a one-woman show project, which I'm very excited about. It might be a little way off yet. We haven't quite got the script ready yet, but what do I want people to know? Well, I'm performing at the Biltmore Hotel for New Year's here in Los Angeles, and I'm working in the studio on new music, and I'm very excited to bring it to everybody when it's ready.
I think that's beautiful. Do you have a website?
I do, victoriasummer.com.
Oh, that's easy.
It's easy, yeah, and specifically singing, victoriasummerentertainment.com, but that's specifically for my singing, so,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm putting this down so that when people call, I can tell them.
thank you.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things where you started out early because you love what you were doing. I did a lot of singing for the longest time, but, you know, life takes us in different tracks. It just does.
Yeah.
Because I was doing musical comedy and singing across the country at different conventions, et cetera, when someone dared me to audition for a television show, and I got it. So,
wow,
this
fantastic.
Is what, but it, you know, the good Lord decides where you're going to be, and they'll put you on the right path, and you're on the right path because you love what you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, as long as I love what I'm doing, that's good. I just have many interests, so I think that I'm probably not going to stick at one thing. I'll be like, okay, I've done that now. I want to do this.
Good for you. I love it. And we'll be looking for Fabrizio and his own television show. And who knows, maybe you guys can do that together.
Absolutely. I keep saying to him, you know, well, you're an amazing client. You know, if they need a singer for one of their dinner parties.
Sure.
You know, come and sing.
Why not? I think that's fantastic. Well, listen, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with me today because, you know, you made it a fun time to talk about life and, you know, what's all about. And people have to share that. They can still search for life at any age. Age is nothing. We said it about Tom Cruise. He's still doing. What is it? Mission Impossible 40? You know, I don't know anymore.
And then Top Gun. I mean, the success of Top Gun was just next level. I mean, it's just unbelievable what he's doing and continues to do.
And the
inspirational.
Absolutely, that you can reinvent yourself in so many different ways.
Yeah.
That's the way to go. Well, thank you so much for being with us. I hope you come back and visit again. Let me know when your single comes out, okay?
I will do. Thank you for having me on your show. So lovely to chat with you.
Right back at you. You take good care now.
You too.
Once again, that's Victoria.